loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm John Kiriakou, and I'm joined in studio by co-host Brian Becker. In this hour, we take a look at the news of the day. First, Congress has just hours to act to avert a government shutdown as intense negotiations over the future of undocumented youth, the CHIP health program, and government spending appear to have hit a wall. Next, congressional Republicans are demanding the release of a memorandum they allege contains explosive information about surveillance directed at the Trump campaign during the 2016 election. Then on Thursday, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia announced that it would drop 129 of the remaining 188 felony rioting charges against Trump inauguration demonstrators, leaving a core of 59 people left with felony charges. This comes after the first 20 people charged went to trial and were found not guilty on all counts. Will any of these cases stand up in court? And then, more than 2,000 Haitian and Haitian-American activists marched from Brooklyn to Wall Street today to protest the Trump administration's recent comments about that Caribbean country. And finally, today is our second week of a new segment that we like to call Wham! Headlines. We'll take a look at the worst and most misleading headlines of the week. That's all coming up next on Loud and Clear. But first, we turn to the government shutdown. Congress has just hours to act to avert a government shutdown as intense negotiations over the future of undocumented youth, the CHIP health program, and government spending appear to have hit a wall. We're joined from Western Pennsylvania by Tom Prigg. He's a Democrat running for the U.S. Congress in Pennsylvania's 12th District. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tom, I'm looking at CNN's constant updates of talks, most recently talks between President Trump and Senate Majority Leader Schumer, apparently really the only principals in the room. They met for several hours, late morning, early afternoon. And I'm struck by a couple of things. The White House says that the president is not negotiating with Schumer. Schumer arrived at the White House with only a few aides. Trump was the only Republican in the room. And then the meeting went on and on and on. So regardless of the White House's denial, it seems to me like negotiations are exactly what are happening in that room. What do you think is going on? And do you think that the Trump administration is willing to concede enough to actually win over enough Democrats to enact this continuing resolution?
Not really. I honestly believe that this entire shutdown, showdown, if you want to call it, is really about Trump. If you look at the Republicans and Democrats, they've both come to a table and talked about this spending bill, about bipartisan. Republicans put a six-year extension for CHIP into the bill. The Republicans said that they would come to concessions with DACA, with more border support. And Trump has basically said he doesn't want DACA. And he's also gone back and forth on CHIP. I mean, I'm not sure where he actually stands. You know, Wednesday he supports it. Thursday he tweets he doesn't. Today he supports it again. So this is all Trump, really.
You know, I have to agree with that. It's always about Trump. That's always what it comes down to. And, you know, we've come to the conclusion here on our show, Brian and I, that Trump really stands for almost nothing. There's almost nothing that's a core belief for him, which then ought to lead to the notion that everything is open to negotiation. So is he being intransigent just for the sake of being intransigent? Is he doing it because the Republicans in Congress are demanding it? Or is he going to stab them in the back and cut a deal with the Democrats today? Tom, what do you think?
I think it's really going to come down to, I hate to speak like this, but whatever is best for Trump, seeing Trump's name in the headlines. And it's all about him. It's his show. I think for once, the Democrats and Republicans look like they were trying to come together on a deal. I mean, they've been going back and forth and things like that. But Trump looks like he's just going to do whatever will be a wrench in the wheels, basically. So it's difficult to even understand what he's going to do next.
One thing is, last week, there appeared to be the possibility of a deal because Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham, Republican and Democrat, went to that meeting, now famous meeting, because because Trump blew up. When Durbin said when he got to the meeting, they were coming with a bipartisan agreement for CHIP, for DACA, some border fencing, in other words, trying to give Trump at least a face-saving thing in it. They thought they were coming to make a deal. They got there, and Trump was surrounded by anti-immigrant hawks like Tom Cotton and others. But General John Kelly, who's the chief of staff, is also virulently anti-immigrant. And he was, according to media reports, telling Trump at the last minute, don't do this deal. Now, he used to be in charge of Southcom, the Southern Command for the Pentagon. And he enacted very, very harsh policies regarding immigrants coming from Central America and other parts of Latin America. Trump can't really run the government by himself, even though it is, for him, all about Trump. He has to rely on the advice of Kelly or the direction of Kelly. He has to have some allies. It is conceivable that if Trump, since he doesn't actually have strong opinions about immigration or choice, abortion rights, if he wanted to make a deal with the Democrats at the last minute, he could end up looking like he was really the master of the art of
right,
the deal.
Right. He pulled it all together
at the
end. He'd
get rid of the conservative caucus. They wouldn't support this. But enough Democrats would probably come in behind it because it would have the Children Health Plan, CHIP, and DACA, that he could, you know, as you were suggesting, John, sort of do a double whammy against the conservative parts of the Republican Party. And at the end, be able to say, see, all my bluster and bluff actually got us to where we needed to be to a deal. I don't think it's necessarily likely, but I've been speculating about it for a couple days, that it actually would make sense for Trump politically to do that, to look like he was the one who averted the government shutdown. But again, that doesn't mean Trump will do that, which might be politically smart. We don't know.
No, we don't know.
Yeah, and we did see him do that exact move with North Korea just a week or two ago when Kim Jong-un basically circumvented the United States and went to President Soon about possible peace talks to get into the Olympics. What's Trump do? He gets on and says, see what I created?
Yeah, and he also destroyed ISIS too, single-handedly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, by himself with Eagle, I believe. And, you know, and what's interesting is I just want to go back to your points about John Kelly, his chief of staff. He said that he, you know, that Trump's harsh anti-immigration positions during the campaign were uninformed. You know, this is John Kelly saying that about Trump back then. And he admitted to lawmakers that the U.S. would never be able to construct a wall along the entire U.S.-Mexican border. This is his chief of staff. I mean, so right there, those two positions coming out of John Kelly's mouth tells you that he doesn't listen to his advisors, and whatever Trump is going to do is in Trump's head, and who can follow that?
Perhaps, but also Kelly, when he made those comments, thought that he was paving the way for a deal. In other words, he was explaining, I think he thought he was explaining that Trump was actually shifting somewhat. He thought he wasn't actually insulting Trump, but of course, Trump is such a narcissist. I mean, megalomaniacal, narcissistic personality. And I'm not saying that as a psychiatric whatever, because I'm not a doctor, but it appears that way. And then Kelly got slapped back because Trump was told by right-wing conservatives, hey, he's really insulting you, where Kelly thought he was paving the way for something. Anyway, these are the things that we're speculating about but don't actually know. In a few hours, we're going to see whether or not the government is shut down. What will be the actual impact if it is shut down?
I have to admit, I don't know that's going to have a huge impact on anything. You know, we're going to have some, you know, possibly national parks were shut down, and there'll be some, you know, backlog. But we've seen this kind of move before. I think overall, like a lot of departments, when Trump first came in, there was a hold on hiring government employees, and that caused some big problems. I think our government's basically learning how to adapt and overcome. Am I saying that this becomes a legitimate thing or tactic or something not to worry about? Absolutely not. But at the same time, I don't know that it's going to be such a, you know, catastrophic dysfunction or shutdown. So I don't know if it's really worth it.
Tom, we've got about 30 seconds left. I want to ask you one last quick question. Donald Trump went to Pittsburgh yesterday. He said it was on official business. In fact, he was probably there also to campaign for a Republican running for Congress in the Republican Murphy's old seat. What's the political mood in Western Pennsylvania right now?
I believe it's really energized the Democrats more than it's energizing the Republicans. So that was in the 18th district, right next to the 12th. Same demographic, same partisan voter index, everything's the same. And that was the counter, Connor Lamb, who's the Democrat runner. And to be honest, it got the Democrats fired up. They were going to protest, they were sharing, they were donating. I think overall, it pretty much backfired in his face.
That's going to be interesting to watch. Thanks for joining us, Tom. That was Tom Prigg, a Western Pennsylvania Democrat running for the U.S. Congress in Pennsylvania's 12th district. You're listening to Loud and Clear. Please stay tuned.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Loud and Clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm John Kiriakou.
And I'm Brian Becker.
Congressional Republicans are demanding the release of a memorandum they allege contains explosive information about surveillance directed at the Trump campaign during the 2016 election. We're joined from Maryland by Bill Binney. He's a former NSA technical director who became a legendary national security whistleblower. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me back, you guys.
Bill, we're looking at this, and it's so far appearing only in the right-wing press. There's something in the Washington Times, something on Fox News, and then there's a piece in Newsweek just quoting Fox News. Is this a tempest in a teapot, or is this a real scandal? And can you explain exactly what it is we should be focusing on?
Actually, this is all very real. In spite of the fact that most people don't know about it, that's because the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it. That's because they've been intimidated. If you recall, Jim Rosen, the Associated Press, the threats of indictments, the threats of having grand juries and things like that. That's what they've been doing. That's why mainstream media is so afraid to even talk about this stuff. I've provided any number of mainstream media sites, TV and press, with the data from Edward Snowden that shows how the U.S. government is collecting all the data on U.S. citizens, and whether or not they use it is up to them. But and depending on their motives, whether it's political in the case of what they did with President Trump and his staff, or if it's economical in the case of what they did with Elliot Spitzer to get rid of him because he was going after the bankers on Wall Street for defrauding people, or in the case of the Tea Party where they didn't want people to get active, this is how they use this data. But it's collection of data on everybody in the country as well as around the world, and they have it there stored. And so if you become an irritant in any way or an opposer to any position that government has, they have all this data to go in and investigate anything they want about you. And this is only the tip of the iceberg. So, I mean, they're only talking about it because, it was President Trump and his staff or, people who are known very for, for their positions or for their success in the business or something like that.
Bill, what we're talking about is it's a 4-page memo. It's been circulating around Congress the last day or so, and it's supposed to reveal U.S. government surveillance abuses. I want to read you a couple of quotes, and these are from members of the House of Representatives who have read this memo. Ohio Representative Jim Jordan says, quote, "It is so alarming that the American people have to see this." Representative Mark Meadows, who heads the Tea Party caucus, says, "It's troubling. It's shocking. Part of me wishes that I didn't read it because I don't want to believe that these kinds of things can happen in my country that I call home and I love so much." Let's see. There's another Pennsylvania Representative, Scott Perry. "You think about, is this happening in America or is this the KGB? That's how alarming this is." That's what he says. So this, there's no reason, at least in my experience, that the American people ought not to have access to this memo. Don't you think that it should be released so at least we can weigh the evidence and make our own decisions?
Well, sure, absolutely. But I mean, Congress is just waking up a bit too late. It's only been going on for 16 years.
That's right.
17 years.
That's
now.
An important point.
I This is nothing new. They've known about it from Edward Snowden. They've known about it from any number of whistleblowers. They have just ignored it because they didn't want to deal with it. So, you know, I just call this too late, too little. I mean, this is they've put hundreds of, actually thousands of people in jail with this program, according to Senator Feinstein. Gone through due process. And in the case of Amnesty International versus Clapper, the Solicitor General lied to the Supreme Court about that issue to get it thrown out. And then when the Supreme Court found out about it, they never did anything. So obviously, NSA's got data that gives them some leverage against the members of the Supreme Court.
We're going to come out of that and go directly to this press conference that took place early Monday in Moscow with Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Yemen's Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Abdelmalek Al-Mikhlafi.
Colleagues, good afternoon. We begin a press conference of foreign ministries of Russia and Yemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded our substantive talks. We discussed in detail the political and military situation in Yemen and the prospects of a settlement of the crisis in the country. We also looked at some of the aspects on our bilateral agenda. We think that there is no alternative to the cessation of hostility at an early date in Yemen. We think all the parties should refrain from any attempts to resolve the existing contradictions through the use of force. We think it is necessary not only to continue, but actually to boost international efforts, with the UN playing the leading role to create conditions for lasting political forces in Yemen. We think that the arrangements for different formats and imposed from outside will not be viable and may even be counterproductive. Only themselves can decide the future of their country. And Russia maintains contact in Yemen, and we are ready to provide necessary assistance and leadership of this stance of Russia.
كل دعم لازم ونحن شعرنا اليوم ان مثل هذا يتمتع بالتفاهم والدعم.
We devoted a lot of attention to the humanitarian situation in Yemen, which remains extremely complex. According to UN estimates, 22 million people in Yemen, and that's a huge need assistance, and over 2 million children are starving.
للأوضاع الإنسانية في اليمن التي لا تزال معقدة للغاية ووفقا للتكوين المتحدة هناك حوالي 22 مليون يمني الذين يحتاجون إلى المساعدات الإنسانية وبينهم أكثر من مليوني طفل على خفة
So Russia welcomes the decision by the Arab Coalition to partially lift the blockade of Hodeida, the only artery that connects the cities, the country's biggest city with the north.
We think
that the UN should continue to have access to Sana'a for humanitarian airlift without any obstacles.
Term more fundamentally, it is important to lift the sea and air blockade and open free access for medical supplies and food to all the territories in Yemen.
ومن الضروري رفع الخسار بالكامل الخسار البري فيما يخص بإمداد وتقديم المساعدات بالغذاء أو الأدوية وغيرهما من المستلزمات دون استثناء.
Russia contributes to humanitarian efforts in Yemen. Last year, the Emergencies Ministry sent over 40 tons of humanitarian cargo to Sana'a, and we are now working on another humanitarian delivery to the Republic of Yemen.
المعاناة الإنسانية للشعب اليمني وفي السنة الماضية قدمنا 40 طن من المياه عن طريق طائرات وزارة الطوارئ الروسية إلى صنعاء وأدن والآن يتم دراسة تنظيم القافلة الإنسانية الجديدة لصالح الشعب اليمني.
Unfortunately, as a result of this lasting conflict, basically all the bilateral projects in trade and economic cooperation between Russia and Yemen have been frozen. We will be ready, and we think that our counterparts are in as soon as peace and stability return to Yemen.
وتعزيز العلاقات في كافة المجالات بعد عودة السلام والاستقرار إلى الأراضي اليمنية.
Our people are interested in that, especially considering that we have a lot of relations between our countries. In December will mark 100 years since we established diplomatic relations.
وذلك نظرا للتاريخ الغني للتعاون الثنائي حيث سنحتفل في شهر نوفمبر المقبل بذكرى 90 لإقامة العلاقات الدبلوماسية بين البلدين.
We have agreed with Mr. Minister to continue regular contacts directly and through our embassy in the Republic of Yemen, which recently was moved from Sana'a to Riyadh for security reasons. Continue our dialogue with Houthis and other political forces in Yemen, with all holders, including the Arab coalition, which plays an important role in encouraging pacifying the situation and moving on from military conflict to political dialogue.
وغيرهم من القوى السياسية واليمنية ومع جميع الدول المع في ذلك تلك الأعضاء في التخالف العربي وسنخص التخالف العربي والجميع الذين بإمكانهم تقديم الدعم من أجل تهدئة الأمور في اليمن سنخصهم إلى ضرورة الانتقال الفوري من القتال إلى إطلاق الحوار السياسي.
Thank you.
شكرا مع الوزير جريت محادثات بناءة مع نظيري مع الوزير سيرجي رافوف.
I'd like to thank my counterpart Minister Lavrov, who just had very constructive negotiations.
العلاقات الثنائية وآفاق المستقبل وحتى أيضا موضوع نقل السفارة الأمريكية إلى القدس وقرار الرئيس الأمريكي. حيث أكدت على الموقف العربي الرافض لهذا وترحيبنا بموقف روسيا الاتحادية الداعم للحق العربي.
We discussed the situation in Yemen, our bilateral agenda and prospects for the development of our bilateral ties. We also discuss the decision by U.S. President Donald Trump to move its embassy to Jerusalem. The Arab countries have a unanimous position, and that's why we welcomed Russia's support for the pan-Arab position. Indeed, our relations are long-standing, and as Minister said, on January the 1st, we will mark the 90th anniversary since the establishment of diplomacy and Russia. I've handed over a from the Yemeni leadership to the Russian leadership, and also we recognize Russia's support for the legitimate Yemeni government. المتوافق عليها دوليا وهي المبادرة الخليجية ومخرجات الحوار الوطني والقرارات الأممية بما فيها القرارات 2216 هو الخيار الأساسي لحل سياسي دائم في اليمن يعيد لها الأمن والسلام والاستقرار ويحافظ على وحدة اليمن وسيادته وسلامة أراضي.
During the talks we have reaffirmed нашу поддержку всем соответствующим our support, every initiative, including the Gulf Initiative and UN Security Council resolutions, including UN Security Council Resolution 2216, this is the only option for us that would bring peace and security and return independence. ميليشيا انقلابية تمردت على الشرعية وعلى الدولة وفرضت الحرب.
I've reaffirmed to Minister Lavrov that the peace option is the only option for us, and the war was declared upon us by the militants who initiated riot against legitimate authorities. Today we discussed Russia's role, Russia's support for the peace process. Russia is a permanent member of the UN Security Council and plays its role at the UN implementing all international resolutions. The UN framework is the only path towards peace in Yemen. Has one of the leading roles since it's a permanent member of the UN Security Council. It's one of the co-sponsors of the peace process since 2011. We very much hope that our contacts and consultations will continue. We agreed to intensify them. As for the illegitimate government, it continues to support the UN efforts and the special UN envoy. We've agreed to the results of the negotiations in Kuwait and other areas. Houthis are against the peace process. They set up barriers, and the latest obstacle was the killing of from President Saleh and UN Special Envoy, and gratitude to you, Minister Lavrov, for the humanitarian aid that Russia has provided. We indeed have, there's only one option. Getting back to normal, stopping the war, and restoring state and so-called rescue plan. According to it, all border check will be opened, there will be humanitarian corridors open, and it is today that it will discuss this particular issue. They will come together to discuss this coalition-led plan. We believe that the Yemeni people deserve peace.
وقال لي بها الوزير بأن روسيا تدرس هذا الأمر وستستجيب لأنها حريصة على الشعب اليمني وحريصة على تقديم المساعدات له.
Today, during our talks, I asked a Russian counterpart to send 50,000 tons of grain, and Minister Lavrov said that this request has been considered.
في هذا الجانب أيضا بحثنا الأوضاع بعد اغتيال الرئيس صالح.
We also discuss the consequences of the killing of President Saleh and the situation in the ruling party. Of some bilateral projects, including those related to the prisoners. We would like to continue strengthening our ties. We very much appreciate Russia's role. We cherish the historical ties that we have with Russia.
И мы также стремимся, рассчитываем, что роль России будет и далее в поддержку мирного процесса.
And we hope that Russia will continue the peace process
решениями.
In line with the decisions that have been made.
روس أن من خلال مع الوزير أن يضغطوا على إيران لوقف تدخلها في اليمن.
Также мы выразили пожелание через господина министра, пожелание того, чтобы Иран прекратил свое вмешательство.
And we very much hope, and we told it to the Prime Minister, to the Foreign Minister, that Iran stops interfering in our affairs. Now we move on to questions. Egyptian TV channel.
Здравствуйте, уважаемый Сергей Викторович.
Minister Lavrov. What is Russia's assessment of the situation in Yemen after the killing of former President Mr. Saleh?
First of all, when this happened, we said it was a grave crime, obviously planned in order to disrupt efforts for peaceful settlement. As you know, Ali Abdullah Saleh was in favor of building bridges with the government of President Hadi in order to stop bloodshed.
مع حكومة الرئيس هادي وذلك من أجل إنهاء صفقة الدم.
We had a feeling that very soon Ansarullah will be fully isolated and the situation will be resolved even without any political talks.
وسيتم إيجاد الحل حتى دون اللجوء للأساليب السياسية.
Yet the situation looks much more complex. Mr. Minister has just mentioned the situation in the National Congress, where there is a party in favor of the talks, and there are also hardliners who are in favor of continuing confrontation with the legitimate government of Yemen.
هناك أكثر من تيار هناك الذين يدعمون التفاوض وهناك الذين يريدون اتخاذ المواقف الأكثر قصوة ويريدون استمرار الحرب ضد الحكومة الشرعية.
Все это лишь подтверждает, что альтернативы переходу.
All this demonstrates that there is no alternative to launching pan-Yemeni talks. We share this position with the Yemeni government and will continue advancing this position in our contacts with all the parties in Yemen.
بترويج هذا الموقف في الاتصالات المستقبلية مع كافة الأطراف اليمنية وجميع اللاعبين الخارجيين.
RT. Roman Kozarev, RT English. Minister Lavrov. Turkish special operation against Kurds is now in its third day. The Kurds have been backed by the U.S. What is Russia's assessment of the operation? What is your assessment of the moderate response by the U.S. to the situation? Will it have an impact on Kurds' role in the Syrian peace process?
فيما يخص بالعملية التركية ضد الأكراد في الشمال السوري الأكراد المدعومين من أمريكا ما هو موقف موسكو من هذه العملية ولستم مستغربون من ردة الفعل المتواضعة من واشنطن وأيضا السؤال هل ستؤثر هذه التطورات على مكانة ودورة الأكراد في التسوية السياسية؟
First of all, you probably are familiar with the statements released by Moscow regarding the launch of the military operation in Afrin. There was a statement by the foreign ministry and a statement by the defense ministry. We encouraged all parties to respect the territorial integrity and sovereignty of the Arab Republic of Syria. I would like to remind everybody that we have been pointing out for a long time that the United States pursues a policy of setting up alternative government bodies throughout a large part of Syrian territories.
يتبعون نهجا لتشكيل هيئة الحكم البديلة في الأراضي الشاسعة في سوريا.
Washington openly and also covertly provides modern weapons to different groups in Syria, to their allies, democratic Syrian forces, which rely on Kurdish militia.
علني وبشكل سري تقدم أحدث أنواع الأسلحة الفصائل الموجودة في سوريا التي تتعاون معها أقصد هون قوات سوريا الديمقراطية المؤلفة من الميليشيات الكردية.
В развитии этой линии на грубое вмешательство в внутренние дела Сирийско-Арабской Республики.
This meddling in the internal affairs of the Syrian Arab Republic continues as several days ago, the creation of a borderline force was declared along the entire border with Turkey and Iran.
قبل أيام جاء الإعلان الأمريكي حول إنشاء قوات الأمن الحدودية على طول الحدود السورية التركية والسورية العراقية.
Next, there were some clumsy rebuttals, even though in reality all those activities aimed at establishing control over Syrian territory along the border continued. At the same time, the United States has been discouraging Kurds from having dialogue with Damascus.
Washington
encourages a separatist sentiment among Kurds, ignoring the delicate nature and the regional dimension of the Kurdish issue.
Стремясь понять мотивы такой политики Вашингтона, ну ничего не остается, кроме как предположить,
что это don't understand the motives for such policy by Washington. It's either that they don't understand the situation, or this is an intentional provocation. Now, as regards the role that the Kurds may play in the further political process, they certainly should play a role. But this role should be secured based on a common platform where all the Syrian ethnic, religious, and political forces are encouraged to respect Syria's territorial integrity and sovereignty. That's why Kurdish representatives were invited to the upcoming Syrian National Congress, which will take place next week in Sochi. As regards which will be convened by France, I can say we are a little bit alarmed because of prejudice shown in responding to the Syrian conflict.
لأننا قلقون من التجلي الجديد للتحيز فيما يخص بالتطورات في سوريا.
For example, the French foreign minister said that this session will deal not just with the situation in Afrin, but also with the situation in Eastern Ghouta and Idlib.
For
some time now, our Western partners have been creating a scandalous atmosphere regarding the situation in Eastern Ghouta and Idlib, even though there are militants close al-Nusra front in Eastern Ghouta, shelling the neighborhood where the Russian embassy is located, creation of children which require immediate medical assistance has recently started from Eastern Ghouta with emergency workers.
هناك المقاتلون المرتبطون بجبهة النصرة الذين لا يزالون يقصفون الأحياء في دمشق بما في ذلك السفارة الروسية في دمشق وأيضا يهملون أن بفضل الجهود للحكومة السورية والقوات الروسية مؤخرا بدأت عملية الإجلاء الطبي من الغوطة الشرق أطفال الذين يحتاجون إلى تقديم العلاج العاجل.
Similarly, issuing emotional pleas regarding the situation in Idlib. Our Western counterparts ignore the obvious fact that it is Eastern Idlib where Jabhat al-Nusra controlled the situation until recently, which has been banned by the UN as a terrorist organization. And just recently, the Syrian army launched an offensive, eventually encircling the larger part of Jabhat al-Nusra. And perhaps this is why some Western countries are so concerned. And this confirms once again what we have been talking about for some time now, namely that the U.S.-led coalition tries to spare Jabhat al-Nusra, obviously planning to use this terrorist group later in order to affect the regime change, the so-called Plan B in Syria. This is totally unacceptable for Russia, and we will adamantly oppose any such attempts in the future.
ونحن نتحدث منذ السنوات أن الأمريكا والتخالف تحت عزل وحماية جبهة النصرة من النيران لأنها تحتفظ بها بخطة ب أقصد هون خطة الإطاحة بالنظام في سوريا وروسيا ترفض مثلها رفضا قاطعا ونحن سنبذل قصارى جهدنا للتصدي لهذه المخططات.
It is quite revealing when our Western partners complain about Eastern Ghouta and Idlib trying to protect Jabhat al-Nusra, they turn a blind eye to the humanitarian situation, to the operation that launched in Raqqa, basically demolishing the entire city. But we will continue to insist that the UN and the Security Council should take a closer look at this problem because it requires a lot of humanitarian assistance, demining, otherwise not return to the area.
بهذه التصريحات حول غوطة وإدلب والنصرة وهم يهملون ما حدث في الراقة حيث تم تدمير هذه المدينة بالكامل ولكننا سنواصل طرح هذه القضية أمام مجلس الأمن والأمم المتحدة لأن هذه القضية تحتاج إلى الجهود الإنسانية الجبارة وبما في ذلك لابد من إزالة الألغام هناك وإلا ليس بإمكان السكان المحليين العودة إلى ديارهم في هذه المدينة.
RT Arabic. Moscow insists that all the parties to the Libya conflict need to take part in the peace process. In Russia's stance, is this stance shared by regional leaders, including in Saudi Arabia?
على وجه الخصوص ولا يمكن أن يقوم به آخرون.
سبحانه شكرا. السؤال الأول اللي مع الوزير لافروف كررت موسكو أكثر من مرة أنها الأطراف في اليمن واليوم كررتم مثل هذا الموقف وهل يلقي هذا الموقف تفاهما في الدول الإقليمية وقبل كل شيء في السعودية؟ И второй вопрос йеменскому министру по поводу той роли, которую
Second question was to the foreign minister of Yemen. So what is Russia's role in Yemen? What can Russia contribute that other countries cannot?
As regards responses to our position that there is no alternative to a dialogue between all the parties in Yemen, to the response has been quite positive. Our position
is welcomed by all the players of the UN. We support the efforts by the UN Special Envoy, Mr. Ahmed, to start a dialogue between the legitimate government, the Congress Party, and Houthis. These are the keys right now. And they're all the UN contacts, all of them. We welcome that, and I think all the external players involved in the efforts to deal with the creation agree with that.
السلطة تلك التفاهما من قبل جميع اللاعبين الخارجيين بما فيهم الأمم المتحدة ونحن ندعم الجهود للمبعوث الأممي إسماعيل الشيخ أحمد من أجل إطلاق الحوار بين السلطة الحكومة الشرقية اليمنية وحزب المؤتمر الشعبي العام والحوثيين وهي القوى وهي يجب أن تكون موضوع الاهتمام للأمم المتحدة وهذا ما ترحب به روسيا مثل ما هو الحال مع بقية الأطراف الخارجية التي تسعى للحل في اليمن.
الحكومة الشرعية والتحالف العربي بقيادة المملكة العربية السعودية يدعمون الحل السياسي.
The legitimate government of Yemen and the Saudi-led coalition support the peace process. We agree with on this issue. War is not an
alternative.
The war was imposed upon us because of the coup led by Houthis. They are shelling our brothers in Saudi Arabia. These rockets are still being launched. And it's the Houthis that commit horrible atrocities in Sana'a, the killings of Saleh, of millions, of thousands of people. This is the main barrier to peace talk. Continue to launch rockets against Saudi Arabia. The Houthis proved that they cannot be a reliable partner. If they can prove that they can be a partner in the peace process, then they can join the peace process. And I've reaffirmed what I said earlier. The UN framework, Russia's role should be the key one. I mean that Russia is a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Russia has good ties with all the Arab countries. It does not interfere into Yemen's Envoy for Yemen. And again, it supports the efforts to look for a solution as part of the UN framework. This is why Russia could play in the peace process. Since Russia is one of the co-sponsors of the peace process, it can contact with any other countries. Russia could also play an important role in mitigating Iranian influence or stopping Iranian influence and their support for the militants, and that has been documented by the UN. Russia's plays a key role in the peace process. Russia has a strong focus on contacts with the legitimate government. It supports the UN Special Envoy for the Yemen crisis. Ensure an effective role by the UN via the UN Security Council. The UN framework is the only option to resolve the crisis. We subscribe to all of this. We believe that Russia plays a positive role in the peace process. I confirm once again that peace in Yemen can only be with international law and with the role played by the UN. Thank you so much. The press conference is over.